I'm an addict. My name is Glendora. And I'm only clean today because of a loving God's grace and oh so tender mercy. To Southern California Regional Convention Committee, thank you for, I'm overwhelmed at the crowd. First of all, I thought I paid a couple of y'all to go somewhere else, but I see y'all didn't listen and y'all showed up here and I'm overwhelmed by the hospitality. This is the first time I've ever been in California and like, it's the bomb. For the addict that felt that there was no tomorrow, for the addict that felt that hope was long gone, for the addict who felt that one more hit would get him through the feeling, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. We need you. As I said earlier, I'm only clean through a loving God's grace. And I never want to take that for granted and feel that I'm doing this. See, I've come a long way all the way from Philadelphia here to celebrate this convention with this committee. And it's an honor today to be able to come out of a driveway that I stayed in for 13 years. God is awesome. Narcotics Anonymous, in order for you to identify what stands here before you, you need to know what walked up in here in 1986. They call me Chameleon Woman. I adapt to any situation depending on who had the money and who had the dope. I'm very good at transforming. I'm very good at like sliding in and being very quiet and observant. I live to use and I use to live very simply. I'm an addict. I did all things in order to like stay out there. I was a good soldier for the disease of addiction. I recruited real hard. We all needed a few good men. A few good women too. And I stayed out there so long that it felt normal to be in that environment. At some point at the beginning, it was like uncomfortable, but it's amazing how the disease of addiction will transform what was once not normal into what is normal. What I'm saying is I had a home to go to, running water, soap, towels, the whole love, the family, but I made choices. And I wound up at the end of my addiction running around in an abandoned building trying to make furniture out of crates and boxes, inviting most of you in and you coming in there using buckets to urinate in and finding this place comfortable. They said there's a level of animalistic level that we get to in active addiction. I believe even animals have a sense to some degree how to go home when they hurt or hungry. I wouldn't even go there then. They didn't like me getting high with them because I was a creeper. I would always see something coming. I knew it was going to get me and somebody was on the roof. They wanted me to go real bad. And I stayed up there so long that like all the values that were taught to me as a young girl had long since disappeared. The God of my understanding at that time only came in my thoughts when the drugs were running low or the money was running low or my behind was sore from tricking. All of a sudden it was like, God, please help me. I stayed up there so long, 13 years of trying to fit in the world that I just didn't feel okay in. The skin I was in was never a comfortable place to be. You always seemed much more happier than me. It always felt that the world got more than me. I didn't understand why God didn't love me the way he loved you, so I used. And at the end of my run, I was in an abandoned building, doing a job on a guy that required no application, if you know what I mean. And the funniest thing about insanity, now that I got a couple of years clean, you can look back on it. I can remember my older sister telling my mother, well, you know Glendora is doing a job. And I ain't gonna say what job, you know what job. And she charging $5. And the insanity told me, say, look, mom, no, she lying. I charge 10. Never thought there was anything insane in that action. I was a diehard dope fiend. Anything that would take me outside of myself, anything that would make me feel okay with you touching my body, anything that would erase the pain of rejection, anything that would make me be all right with the moment, I used. And I stayed out there for 13 and a half years using. And I hit a bottom, and I'm sorry, it was my bottom, and I choose not to add another part to my story. It was bad enough for me. I can remember the very end, and this is like the end. You know how many ends I had? Man. Every weekend it was the end. Mom, God love her. I love her dearly. She was one of my greatest enablers. She said, I'm going to take you away from here. Geographical change. We're going to go to Walt Disney World. You're taking an active addict to Walt Disney World. I ain't packed no clothes. I pack my paraphernalia just in case. And the disease of addiction is not impressed by geographical change. It has its own airline. It came right along with me. And I got to Walt Disney World, and I'm seeing the sights with no money in my pocket but a burning desire to use. And I'm robbing Walt Disney blind. I mean, I thought it was like we paid to get in, so everything was free. So my little sister was imitating me, and I'm thinking I'm showing her the right way to do this thing, like, because she's slow and stealing, like, she's messing up my groove here. We get to the gate, it's 105 degrees in the shade, and like, we like getting ready to roll out of there with all this paraphernalia and all these goodies, and the Keystone cops pulled up on us and said, we want to talk to you about your shopping habits. So the good addict that I am, I took advantage of the situation. They made us walk behind Cinderella's pumpkin. So I'm in a parade. I figure I better wave. Hey! Hey! I knew I was going to jail. I figured I had one good hoopla before I went down. We got backstage, and like they told us to sit in this room. They call it the dragnet room. It had a light bulb this big. So I said, I know they can't do nothing with us. And they called in the two witnesses that had spotted us picking up the stuff. It was Goofy and Mickey Mouse. And Mickey Mouse pointed us out. He didn't say very much. He didn't have too much to say, I guess. So I'm figuring this ain't gonna stick. An amazing thing about the disease of addiction, it locks you into, like, denial. Now, I saw all the television cameras, but I figured they were filming y'all for a video later for HBO, so they wasn't watching me. So he pops in a video cassette, and he presses play, and I see me right up in the camera like this. And he said, is that you? I'm like, no, you know we all look alike. And when they started talking that 1 to 5 Florida penitentiary time, it's amazing how sanity is restored. And I got humble, and I got back to Philadelphia only through a wing and a prayer. And I continued the carpet search. I did all the things that you're thinking right now. I've done them. I used young girls and made them trick in order to get high. Understand this in my mind. I figure if they didn't sleep with the man, I slept with them. It didn't count as a sin. My thinking. I went out there, and I hustled, and I did everything. I read books on how to be a prostitute, 101. I stood on the corner. I was so confused. Everybody else was on Broad Street. I was on Stinton Avenue. Everybody thought I was trying to catch the bus. I'm like, get out of here. I'm trying to get some. It was a very confusing time in my life. And somewhere in the midst of all that insanity, I lost me. Society brands the crack addict as gray, skinny, and like drawn up. I was a big girl. I'm like, look, I ain't that bad yet. And it's amazing that one person used to see digging in the trash cans and scratching and all that other stuff. You say, if I ever get like that, I'm going to give it up. All of a sudden, at the end of the addiction, that's my best, that's my roadie, that's my girl. We became best friends, and we were scratching and digging and itching and smelling the same. And it's amazing how funk just travels around. You start blaming everybody else when you know it's you. Who's that stinking? It's you. You're the only one in here. Damn! And you know it's bad when you start getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I remember that addict's last cry, my cry. I remember curling up in a fetal position and like locking and holding on to my knees. And there's a feeling that hits the pit of your soul where you say, I just can't do this no more. And you cry out, and there's a cry that no producer, no director, no motion picture studio could ever recreate. It's that credit, the addict's cry from inside that says, God, please, please, if you just hear me this one time, God, please, 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 can you help me? I don't want to be here. I don't even know where here is anymore. I don't feel anymore. I have a way of turning feelings off and on like a light switch. Can you show me out of the darkness? And I didn't believe that the miracles can happen for me because I would see people actually living lives, going around, going to work clean and like smelling good. And I couldn't connect with that, the spiritual connection that was disconnected. And I went away. I couldn't take anymore. I went away. And an attitude of indifference and intolerance and pride and ego will follow you. And I went in this facility and I did the 7-day detox thing. Went in there with my mother's clothes. And I went in there feeling like I'm not as bad as all these other addicts. I'm just in here to help them out because they need a little help. Because I only use twice, day and night. So it's like no problem really. So I go in this place and out of 17 women, the man is like intaking us. He picked me out of 17. He said, don't you go up there and mess with them men. I'm like, why me? She looked like she would mess. Why? Didn't I? The second day, he knew. I climbed over the wall and found the men. And I got in there, and the funniest thing about God is like he's so loving. He knows where to hit you at in order to get your attention. I'm on the phone because the disease is telling me, check out. You got 2 days clean. You can go back out and do it differently. And I'm on the phone with my biggest enabler, my mother, and I'm saying to her, these people got abscesses and big holes, and they're scratching, and they're not looking too cool, Mom. Can you come get me? Because I'm going to be good. If you lock me in the morning, throw some food in there in the afternoon, and let me out at night, I'll be all right. And Mom is feeding into the line. And I'm sitting there on this phone, and right across from me, there's this elevator that lets you up to the detox floor. The elevator opens up and these lights come out. And the guy was sitting there talking to somebody behind him because his back was facing me. And he had on one of the little hospital gowns with the little knot in the back where the booty be showing. And I said, Mom, I'm gonna stay one more day. And I thank God for that booty because, see, the next day, Narcotics Anonymous sent H&I up there and I got a message of hope. And I heard some stuff coming out of these addicts' mouths that I couldn't relate to because I was still in the zone, but all I knew was that they said that they had used like I used. And that they weren't hurting anymore, that they had found a place where they fit in with other addicts just like themselves. And they met regularly and they did things together. And I didn't understand the concept of like getting with someone and not using. All my life had been geared towards using. So when I came into my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I had 8 days clean. I had a box haircut that was not in style. I had a prize fighter belt from the thrift store, a pair of bell-bottom pants that was definitely played out, some $9.99 shoes that was turned over at the ankle because I had stole them, and you know how that goes. And I stood there in the back with all the men, because y'all know y'all needed me back there to keep y'all like calm and cool. And I was on inventory roads checking you out and making sure, like, look, in order for me to feel okay with who I was, I had to look at you because I didn't want to look at me. And it took an experienced member, an old timer, you know, to come back there and say, you come up here with me. I'm like, you want me? And he said, yeah, you come on up here. So I followed him up and like, I'm following him like a beacon and it's amazing. I told you God is awesome. Cause I'm like, we can stop right here. We don't need to go all the way up front. We can talk right back here. You ain't gotta go. Why are you going all the way up there? You don't need to go up there. He walked me over to the front row. I'm like, oh no, because see, the thing about being a new member, you wear your feelings on your sleeve, and I felt like my eyes were the window to my soul, and if you looked at me, you would see all the degradation and all the embarrassment and shame that I've carried with me. And when he took me on that front row, I felt y'all all was staring at me, and it was going to be like a conversation on who and why is she here. And y'all all kept hugging. The women kept hugging and the men kept hugging. And I thought it was a gay convention and y'all passed this basket around. So I knew y'all were a religious organization. And I thought y'all was kind of like cultish. I was so confused. But I walked and I followed him because he was cute. And he set me on the front row and he said, you need to sit right here. And I'm like, well, where you gonna sit at? He said, no, you need to sit right here. This is the critical care unit, and you need to be right up here in front. And Narcotics Anonymous, I have sat on that row for 14 years, and that's how I stayed here. So begins the journey. We are miracles. My father told me with 8 days clean that I would never stop using, that I'd be a junkie and die a junkie just like him. I looked at my father and I didn't know how to say it then because I was afraid that what he was saying was true. I felt that like whatever parents said was the ultimate like verdict. And I took it like this. I'm like, look, just for the day, if I don't use, just for the day, if I like stay around them NA people, just for the day, if I like get some new people around me that are about something that I'm about, I could possibly make it too. And I started showing up. I was a meeting making mother. I got my mother's van and I figured if I had to go, all of y'all gotta go. Just jump on top, hang on the door. I don't care. We gotta go to the meeting. We must go because I don't know how not to use. I don't know how to live. All I know is we're an hour and a half, I'm safe. And I started making meetings and I started showing up and I don't know when the miracle happened, but I tell you this, it was maybe the 9th or 10th or 12th day clean. I left a meeting and I didn't go through the back driveway. I didn't go down 5th and Butler, which is a copping area in Philly. I went straight home. That's rare for me. And I went in the house and I came through the front door and I had a key. I had a key again. And my mother didn't make me clap my hands and let me know where I'm at. I went to my room and I went up in my room and I washed my body in the shower and I got on clean sheets. I didn't roll from under a trick. I wasn't doing anything that made me feel degrading. I put on clean underwear. Do you understand from tricking? I hadn't had those things in a long time. And I laid down on sheets and I didn't pass out. I didn't go into a coma. I went to sleep, a sleep that only God can give you. Because see, I was living a life that I had always dreamed of. And I didn't know it then, but I knew something was different. Something was different. And I went to sleep in Narcotics Anonymous, and when I woke that next morning, them same birds that used to drive me crazy in active addiction, I used to want to kill them. Them birds were making this beautiful noise. It was okay. It was like not bothering me. And like, look, my story's always been I'm Dracula's daughter. I don't know about you, but I did better in the dark. I rolled in the dark. Most of my relationships were in the dark. Look, I met him in the dark. We went over and we came over my house in the dark. We had sex in the dark. He got up in the dark. He went home in the dark. He came back the next night in the dark. So what did I, come on, of the light, are you serious? So here we go. Now follow me. I can talk really fast. So now, I wake up. I hear the birds. I see the sun. I'm not like this. I'm like, oh my God. And I look on the dress. And the night before, we had a little basket passed around. I put my little dollar in. I was so proud of myself. But I had some change left over. And I looked over on the dresser that morning. I saw that dollar something since. That was my spiritual awakening. That an addict like me can go to bed and sleep and wake up the next morning with money on her dresser is beyond my wildest dreams. So I said, okay, this is what they're talking about. All right, this is where the change. I don't know what's happening. I'm like comparing myself to your outsides, but it's okay because I'm in the right space. And I'm starting to make meetings and I'm like not understanding this NA language. So I sat down one night and I started thinking about some things and I started backtracking. I'm like, all right, in active addiction, we met regularly at the same place that there was dope there. That was the home group. There was always somebody telling me I was short last week. That was the secretary. There was always one active addict who told you, like, look, we're going to put this money together and go get this. That was the treasurer. And usually the person with the least amount of money or the least amount of skills was a steward, which was me. And there was always an individual, and I know I'm going to take you back. There was always an individual who took the time to slowly teach you by using up your drugs and your money how to kill yourself. So why not now in recovery we understand the flip side as far as there's nobody other than just like flipping this negative into the positive. Here's somebody who's teaching me how to live through their experience. In active addiction, here's somebody who's teaching me how to die with their experience. Flip it. It's very simple. So I said, okay, I'm feeling this thing. All right, I got this a little bit. So I started making meetings, and I got a home group. And I didn't have a sponsor in the beginning because I understand what the hell that was. And y'all kept saying it, and y'all started sounding like parrots. And I thought all y'all were broke and stuck. I told y'all we were a cult. So then one day this girl said to me, are you going to get a sponsor? I said, okay. I'm going to get paid Friday. I'm going to get two. All right? And I got this sponsor, and I didn't understand how to use it, but I knew this. Let me explain. I want to do this for the newcomer, because you got to understand something. If I happen to forget where I came from, there may be some problems in my present recovery. I'm telling you. So I came in here, and I got this sponsor, and I got this home group, and all these things started happening for me, and I wasn't using, and all of a sudden, hormones came back. Hormones that had been under arrest for quite a while came back. I didn't ask them to come back. They just popped up one day, and I was at a meeting cleaning up. I was a steward. And I was cleaning up the coffee pot, and it just kind of like hit me. Dad, one-eyed Jack look good. One eye. All of a sudden, I was in love with everybody. And it didn't take much. You didn't have to say much. You just looked at me, and that was it. We were married with two kids and a dog named Toto. And I was in there, and I was like feeling these things, and I started learning about the disease of addiction, which is multifaceted, which means it has so many levels. When you think you got one, here come another one. I started learning, like, look, when I got clean, I started getting some money. I started hitting the diners. And my first experience with the diner was with old timers. And I was at a meeting, and we were outside, and they said, Glenn, you want to go with us to the diner? And as a newer member, I felt intimidated by that clean time. They had a whole year clean. And I was like amazed. And they said, oh, come on, oh, come on. It was cold. And I thought about if I go to the diner with them, I'll get a ride home. So I'll go if you insist. I mean, whatever. So I went to the diner, and I didn't have very much to talk about as a new member because I felt intimidated by this NA language. And they would talk to me, and they would say things to me, and I would say, I'm all right. I'm all right. It's okay. And they ordered these T-bone steaks that were really thick, and they ordered these big cheeseburgers. And I didn't have very much money because I was new at this. I still hadn't learned how to balance money yet, and I was afraid to have too much on me, so I only took a little teeny bit. So I'm in there trying to impress them, but I know I can't hold up like what they was ordering. So I said, I have a tea and a salad. Now understand my story. I came to Narcotics Anonymous a big girl. Ain't nothing changed now. So a tea and a salad to a big girl is like a Tic Tac to a whale. It ain't nothing. So they steady talking and they eating. And the experience, remember the most time, a year and 2 months, said, waitress, order this girl a cheeseburger. I'm all right. Still in denial. My stomach said, So now understand, I ain't got much conversation going on with these people because I'm not feeling them yet. And then the waitress bring me my hamburger and put it in front of me, right? And my hands are shaking now because, you know them hunger pains, the halts. So I take a bite of this succulent, juicy, watery hamburger, and it hit that void. And that feeling of isolation and like that feeling of like loneliness and that feeling of rejection and that feeling of wanting to fit in sort of subsided. And I came up from biting that hamburger. I said, I've been clean for 30 days. I've been making meetings. I don't go around drugs no more. I don't use nothing. I can keep coming back. I turn everything over. I ask God to remove it. And they looked at me with amazement. They said, we didn't know you had all that in you. And me thinking like a good dope fiend that I was at that time said, well, dang, if I keep doing this and hanging around them, I get free meals every meeting. They said, come on, when the food was all gone and we got to leave, they said, now, this is the time where you take what we gave you and you pass it on to someone else. Do for someone else what we did for you, and that's how we do it. You can't keep it unless you give it away, Glendora. An addict with 2 days clean can turn to an addict with 1 day and tell them how they got that day. Never forget that. And I started making meetings, and the transformation happened, and there's a lot of years, and I just want to hit the high points for me. I came into Narcotics Anonymous, not young, not old, just kind of like there. I smoked up many years. I was one of them back 70s girls, my age, right? Remember them days in the basement, them parties in the basement with them black lights with the girl posted that glow in the dark? Yeah. There's some people here remember them days. Remember them days when that black light used to make lint come all over your clothes and you'd be picking and picking and picking? I thought about if crack was prevalent, then I probably would have smoked up half of y'all. All that white stuff. So I came in here and I didn't know how to fit in, and y'all started having these darn dances. And I didn't want to let you know that I had like smoked up the 70s and 80s and a couple of, I just didn't know how to dance. And I got to my first NA dance and I was still living off of old information. And I got in there and this guy had the nerve to come over and ask me to dance, and oh, that was it. And I got up there and I was getting it. Boy, I was doing a robot, the Michael Jackson and everything. And I thought y'all were watching me in order to imitate my steps, but y'all were just like, damn, keep coming, girl. Just keep coming. And that's how I learned, by making mistakes and watching you. And I started learning about, like, I wanted to be a lady. I had so long, like, tricked and worked the streets and hustled and whored, even in the first couple of months. Let's try years in recovery, let's be honest. I wanted to learn how to be a lady and keep my legs closed and stop treating them like they were peanut butter, easy to spread. I wanted to feel okay in the skin I was in. I was tired of using things in here. So I started hanging around ladies. And I started imitating them and doing what they did. And they took me to a mall. And I'm doing this for the newer member. When you get clean, you're going to hear recovery is an inside job. Yes, we do know that. But in order for you to touch the inside, you got to get through the outside. And what you see in the mirror is not the inside. You connect with the gray skin, the ashy elbows, the bad hairdos. Look, I started learning about weaves and perms and press-on nails. I was hot. I got in there and the women took me into the mall. Oh my gosh, I found another form of disease, Rose's head. People were asking me, what time did I get off of work from the mall? Because I stayed in there so long, I knew when shipments would do. I had shoes of every color, the same style, just in case I might get an outfit in the year 2004. You never know. And I started, like, masking some things, and I started, like, wearing feminine things, and I started, like, liking who I was, and Victoria was in the secret no more. I liked the fact that I had these things, and these things were not me. They weren't making me. Do you understand? Recovery goes on the inside. Yeah, we dress up the outside, but these were not the things that were me. Without these things, I was okay. And I made meetings. And I used my sponsor because I found out what a sponsor was about. And I started, like, wanting some of the things I had lost in active addiction. We get in here and we get a couple of months clean and a year or two under our belt, and all of a sudden we want back what we lost. And some of us ain't ready for it, because I believe God will give it to you when He feels you're ready and able to handle it. And I wanted the baby so bad. I wanted the NA baby because I wanted you to, like, run around the meetings and say, shh, 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 to my baby too, like I did yours. And I wanted this baby. So, of course, in order to get this baby, I had to get the husband. And I don't share about this very often, but it's starting to haunt me, so I need to talk about it. I heard you girls sharing about you were married, you met the guy in your home group or your meeting or whatever, and you got married, and to me that put you up here. And it made me feel less than, because I was not married, and I'm like wondering what's wrong with me again. So I went to my home group and the guy looked at me and I looked at him and I married him mentally and it was on. So we got engaged real quick because he just wanted it and I wanted it and we did it and it was good. Okay, thank you. So right, real quick, the year went by and we went through the planning of the wedding. And on the day, like maybe 4 months before we got married, I had dropped like 93 and a half pounds. And pride and vanity crept up. And I was wearing things spandex hadn't even invented yet, but I was engaged. And I didn't understand why now all the attention I was getting from other men was I shackled to this man. And I started looking at him like out the corner of my eye saying, I'm not sure I want to do this, but because of pride and ego, I was afraid what NA would say about me if I called it off. So I got there on the day of the wedding, my back went out, the ring bearer head got in a crick. We got flowers from a funeral, my flowers went to somebody else's wedding. It was one of them days you just don't want to remember kind of days. I got up to the front of the altar, and when we got up there and they put the rings on, he put the ring on the wrong finger. And I knew it was effed up from there. We got married and we stayed married maybe more, maybe about 7 or 8 months. And let me explain something to you. Now, I'm speaking very slow, which people in Philly would probably be very amazed. But my husband, he stuttered. And I'm not talking about people. I'm not being negative. It was who he was. But he would stutter and kind of like a lock stutter, like, I talk fast, so I know my defect of character would be to get into an argument with him that he could not win. And I would gear up. And I would go at him. And my mouth would go so fast, by the time he was like, I was out the door, down the street, drove off. He was still, and I would do that. So, of course, you know the marriage didn't last very long. But I learned something about that. You know, I learned a lot about that. Wanting to be where everybody else is thinking that's where you need to be. I had to learn to accept where God has me. And rejoice and have gratitude for where I am right now. So, back to this baby. I've had every surgery possible in recovery to have a baby. And the doctor came to me and he said, Mrs. Bellamy, you know, there's nothing that can help you. You're hopeless. And for an addict to be told that they're hopeless, it kind of like crushes everything you've been taught in recovery. But if it were not for you and me making that meeting that day when that doctor told me that, I believed in my heart that I would have fell apart. I would have crumbled. I'm not going to say used. I'm just saying I would have crumbled spiritually. Because you rebuilt me back and you let me know, like, having a baby does not make me a woman. It's like the things that I think are very important are top A, number one, they ain't that much no more. So I kept making meetings and I started changing and life goes on. And what I'm talking about is levels of acceptance and recovery. Everything is not going to happen the way you think it should happen. What I had to learn is how to accept what God gave me and be okay with it and pray for patience when things wasn't moving fast enough. And that's what I learned through the process. So I got a sponsor and I said, I want what you had to offer. And I'm willing to make the effort to get it. But I understand there are certain steps that I must take. See, I've done the things with the men. I've slept around. Look, it got to a point where, like, I felt men need to take numbers, like in a deli. 36, yeah. And I need to share this for those that are stuck there because this is the beginning of a convention and this weekend is very fun and it's nice. We have a tendency to get selective amnesia. We leave home and we're married and we get here and forget we are. And somehow it's like, it ain't cool. So I got selective amnesia quite a lot. So I got in these rooms and I learned about the disease of addiction. I learned that I was always trying to fill a void with something. Most of the time it was penises. I've had big ones, short ones, tall ones, small ones, ones you gotta look for, ones you can't find, ones where are they? I ain't seen them last time. I've had them all. And I learned something about that. Like, look, what I learned, that recovery cannot be sexually transmitted. This is an investment. Think of it as a large bank account, your life. And the more you put into this program, the more you put into your personal recovery, the more you're going to get out. I started learning about praying when the times are good, so when the times were bad, it wasn't so hard to jump down there and do it. I started learning things about, like, saying I surrender, letting it go. And when I got to that first step, like, look, that was the cornerstone of my foundation. See, I've always wanted a $1 million life. I've always wanted the house on the hill, my life being peaceful. But I've always built it on a $2 foundation. So see, I wanted a foundation that was strong enough to weather any storm. So I needed the steps. The steps are the program. And I got a sponsor and I got some literature and I didn't like leave it on the shelf and allow dust to grow on it. I kept my tools on me. What are my tools? I started learning about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And with those, we are well on our way. Where we are well on our way, getting to know who we are. It ain't got nothing to do with you. It ain't about you. It's about me. It will begin with me and it will end with me. I'm the one who at the end of my road has to stand before my God for judgment. I ain't got to worry about you. It's hard enough trying to deal with my own yard instead of standing in yours. So I started working on me and I started transforming. And I took that first step and I started learning that it's real easy to admit I'm an addict. I'm a great actress. They say Sybil has 16 personalities. My name is Ibble. I got 21. You never know who I am. So I had to take it on a deep level of acceptance. Like, I can't save my father. I can't go around people, places, and things and try to save the world reading literature in the crack house. I'm sorry, I can't do it. So I surrender and I let it go. And when I let go of control, God gives me some serenity. And when I'm given serenity, I'm able to move on to the group, which for me was a power greater than myself. They restored me to sanity. On a lot of these, when I want to take some of y'all out of here, I will come to the group and somebody would always share exactly where I was at to restore me and let me know where I could be and if I do what I want to do. And as I got more time clean, I realized, like the second step says, insanity is repeating the same mistake over and over again. How about repeating the same mistake over and over again, knowing the end results, and I still do it anyway because it's just like who I am. But I started believing the power greater than me could restore me to sanity. Restoration takes a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's through trial and labor. And like I had to like keep trying. And I started having some hope. And with the hope, I was able to transform over to a third step. And I had to make a decision. And it's so easy when you wake up in the morning to be real spiritual. God's will be done. But by lunchtime, you got a lunch break at work and you're sitting out in the park with your girls and this brother run by looking like all that. My will be done. So I started learning about pain. Pain for me is a motivator to do the right thing. And I have a tendency to let go and let God for you on audience. Like from this podium, it's so easy to say, yes, I've let go and let God. But have you really let go and let God? Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Being in a relationship past the expiration point, you know what I'm saying? It's over. But you telling everybody in the group, yeah, I ain't messing with so-and-so, but you're still calling his house. You still got a secret number to check his messages. You're still at his home group checking him out to see who's in there. You're still going to buy his kid's house. You ain't like him before, but now all of a sudden they're the cutest little kids you ever want to meet. Have you really let go, Glenn? And I realize when the pain gets great enough, the ability to let go becomes easier. And I make a decision and I have to sometimes go back and ask God, why you allow me the pain again? And he says, because you didn't learn the lesson the first time. Let it go. And when I let it go, I'm able to start taking a look at myself and the part I play and the patterns in my life that keep me in the pain that I stay in. And I did a 4-step inventory. And I stopped procrastinating and stopped putting the pen down and I just faced it. And every time I would get stuck, I would pray for God to give me the strength and courage to face who I am. Now, I'm not a bad person. I'm not a great person, but I'm not a bad person either. And it's okay to talk about me because it's for me. And through a 5th step, I understand the divine order of life, God, myself, and another human being. If I kept life in that order, it would be so much more simpler. Because I have a tendency to put whatever relationship I'm in before God, and God takes it away every time. So I started learning about the exact natures of my wrong, which is another name for a character defect. And it's just like when a girl who looks really sharp, dressed really nice, comes into a meeting and asks me, say, Glenn, where you get that shirt from? I like that. All of a sudden, my self-esteem is being attacked because I don't feel like I've made up to her. I'll lie and say something like Saks Fifth, Lord Taylor's, knowing it was Kmart. My self-esteem is like just not there. And the 6th step, I become entirely ready when I become entirely ready. Not when you think I should, but when I become entirely ready. Situation in point, 12 years clean. I was in a car, my car. I have a license and insurance today only through Narcotics Anonymous, teaching me to do the right thing. I was waiting at the light was red. Bright light to wait at. I'm sitting there jamming, I'm all spiritual, God is good. I'm sitting there and I hear this car slam on brakes and it hit the back of my car. My car slammed into the car in front of me. I'm in the car and I'm saying to myself, because you taught me how to do this, God, don't let me act like I'm asshole. God, let me be spiritual. So I'm all spiritual up and I'm like, I'm okay, I'm all right, I'm fine, all pieces are here. I get out the car and I'm going around checking the 2 people, making sure the girl that hit me wouldn't get out the car. And I'm like, it's okay, I'm all right, I'm fine. So I go, which is a main street, broad street, and I'm directing traffic. I'm like, everybody go around, no blood, no arms torn off, go around. And as I'm standing there directing traffic, the sun comes from behind the clouds and like it shines on me and I see my shadow on the ground. I'm looking at my shadow. I'm like, something is wrong. Something ain't fitting right. And I'm like starting to check myself and I started and I felt up there. Girl, for knock my weave. I'm like, get out the car. Come on. And she wouldn't roll her windows down so I could get her, so I was trying to grab her lips through the hole. Now understand, just a few minutes ago, I was entirely ready to have anger removed. It's amazing. When I got back to my car, my weed was sitting on the back seat like one of the kids. And God, in his love for me, sent a seven-step member, which was a police officer, and I humbly asked God to remove my shortcomings. And I realized, like, I had done some harm through an eighth step, and I made a list and I checked it twice, and I really found out that I was not too nice. On the ninth step, a lot of days I wasn't able to complete the amends, and the best thing was staying clean and not doing further harm to myself or anybody else. Because I've done a lot of married men, and I don't see myself going up to their wives saying, "I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones. Me and Mr. Jones had a thing going on. It ain't going on no more, but I'm sorry." I don't see it. And I started learning like 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 never end. You're never finished. Tim Step told me you better check yourself before you wreck yourself. It says, take a look at you. Are you really living the program? Are you an example to a newcomer when you're sitting in the back of the meeting talking through the whole thing? How you acting in group when they're having a business meeting? Are you a person that get upset and change your own groups because they don't go by your vote? Glenn, how you living when you see that newcomer crying? Do you feel and wait for everybody else to grab them because you feel like it's too much work to get all the way over on that side? How you living? Are you really an example? Are you really a messenger? Are you really the person that you want to be? And I started changing. 11th step told me it's like time now to clear up the static. 1 through 10 cleared up the static between me and God. And I started learning like God's will for me was always there anyway. It's just I made choices that didn't connect with his will. And I started learning that God loves me despite some days how I feel about myself. And he'll show me. But I had to learn how, like through prayer and meditation, to connect with his will. And it ain't always easy to practice God's will. I'm sorry. This is from a single person's perspective. When you go home and you're alone and that side of the bed is cold, and loneliness steps in and tells you that you're not worthy, you're not pretty enough, you're not sexy enough, you know, all these things. Loneliness has a voice like no other. It'll tell you you'll never be anything, you'll never have what she has. No one will ever stand the storm with you and like really stick it out. It tells you these things. You start doubting God. And I had to keep like in prayer and like say, I know this is a lie because I know God, all you say for me to do is just be patient. What you're creating for me and a mate is going to come in your time. What you want me to do right now is work on me so when my mate comes, it won't be like I got to leech off of him in order to be whole with who you are. And I had to change. I had to make some serious changes, Narcotics Anonymous. One of the most serious changes I had to make was this year. I need to like share, I think any speaker that comes up here, she needs to let you know who they are. Before I got to that 12 step, I've done some experiences like, but still with years clean, still mystifying, like amazed me. On June 7th, me and my mate broke up, boyfriend, whatever you want to call him. We broke up, he moved out. To be really honest, I moved him out. Time went on and I started dating someone else. Now understand, I follow the story. I started dating this other guy. This other guy was like very religious, but he was in the program, which I thought was like so great. It balanced out. And I saw this guy and I'm like thinking, this is the man for me. God sent him. I know it. He's got my mark on his forehead made for you. And I wanted this man. And like, he said, no sex. I said, excuse me. He said, no sex. Okay. Y'all said, try something different. All right. So I wanted to do the courtship thing, the little Brady Bunch or Mrs. Brady kind of thing, like, all right, no sex. But somewhere the hormones, and we being real, and I got to be honest, hormones started showing up because it had been kind of a long time. So he was kind of like running from me and like hiding and kind of like not giving me no womp womp. So my ex who moved out all of a sudden wanted me back, but in the meantime, because of his gambling addiction, he chose to rob a bank. He came back trying to be my boyfriend again, but the problem is when he came back, so did the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. So the FBI was chasing my ex-boyfriend who was chasing me, And I was chasing the boy that wouldn't give me none. So this is the story how it go. The boy, he's running, hiding his stuff. I'm trying to get his stuff. He trying to get my stuff. And the feds trying to get his stuff. And we all running. Everybody going. Everybody going. No, no, no. No, no. And this is what years clean. So this has been one hell of a year. In the midst of all that, I come out of there to find out that, like, for 2 years now, knowing 12-step is very important. It ain't just about this. It ain't just about flying around the United States being a great speaker. It's about being able to go in them hospitals and them institutions. It's about going to people's homes when they're bedridden and walking with them and letting them know this program still works whether you're there in the rooms or not. The 12 step is the way I live. It's ingrained in my spirit. It's the way I deal with people at my job. It's the way I handle people out on the streets. It's the way I deal with my neighbor next door. It's the way I deal with my community. So here I go, like, feeling all these, like, spiritual feelings, and, like, the doctor said that I had a tumor and that the tumor should have been removed 2 years ago, but I chose not to because I wanted this baby I told you about. And I held on to the belief that if I held out a little longer, somebody would come up with a solution for my problem. And so I finally had to surrender because the pain was great enough for me to, like, be bending at the knees. And I wound up having to have a hysterectomy in the midst of all that chaos I just told you about. And I asked God, like, you know, I see babies all the time being born and thrown away in trash cans, mothers leaving them. Why not me? You know, I didn't understand, like, you know, sometimes in order for us to share our experience, we have to go through painful situations and get through not used to let people know, like, look, you can make it. And I didn't understand what God's purpose in life was for me, because, look, my thoughts were like a woman's only job is to make babies, and that was, like, our main purpose in life. But y'all proved that so wrong. I got spawn seeds all over the United States, and those are my babies. Most of your kids, I own daycare centers, and I got most of your kids. And from 6 in the morning to 6 at night, I'm with 4 months to 12 years old. What I'm saying to you, Narcotics Anonymous, is when sometimes life serves you up a lemon, you got to make some lemonade. Sometimes you got to stand in the midst of a storm and, like, just hold on, tie a knot in it, and say, I know God's got something better at the end if I just stand still. See, my fear will tell me to run and lock into, like, that mode of, like, self-pity and, like, self-loathing and self-hatred. But see, the steps are the solution. They tell me, Glenn, it's going to be okay if you just don't get in the way of what I got to do. And, like, a lot of days I don't know if I'm going to make it, but I know through sponsors and sponsorship I'm going to get over. Very simply, I'm a 41-year-old woman. I ain't got no back teeth. I can bite you, but I can't chew you up. I got a bad back. Boobs don't stand up like they used to. That's real. But I got a heart of gold, and I got a heart, and I got ears to listen. I've been dealing with great levels of honesty. I got a story to tell. I am an addict. I am an addict that has come and seen some storms that most people thought, like, they would never make it through. I've made it through. They say that we couldn't. They said the dregs of society, the wretched. We are that. But they usually use the wretched in order to be the messengers. We are the messengers. We are the miracles, Narcotics Anonymous. We are the ones society said couldn't do. We're the ones that people will be afraid of and say, like, look, I can't touch that. I can't do that. You ain't gonna be able to make that. But see, let me tell you something. No matter what life throws at me, if it ain't gonna kill me, it's only gonna make me stronger. And I ain't taking no laying down, no cuts, no shorts. I'm coming up and I'm standing up with some courage. And a lot of days it's so hard to stand up for self, but part of God's will is to be able to be assertive and speak up for who you are. I've learned so much about God's will in the area of relationships, sexual. Oh, man, let me impart. I got to do this. I got a couple of minutes. I'll talk real fast. I've been working on this area of sexual relationships. I am not the poster child for relationships. Please do not know. But I started learning some deep stuff. There are 4 levels in a relationship. It's that first level we call the enchantment stage. That was when everybody looks good. You're on the phone. You don't want to hang up. You can't. Oh, you smell his cologne still in your. Ooh, ooh. You even buy a bottle and spray your room yourself. You just can't stop thinking about it. You be at work. Somehow, the second stage slides in there slowly, and it's called disillusionment. All of a sudden, they got bumps on their booty, their breath stink, they snore when they sleep. They ain't as good looking as they was in the dark when you first met them. What happened? The weave is sliding to the left, her nail done popped off, it don't look right. You start saying things you ain't seen before. They always been there, but see, you was stuck in enchantment. Now all of a sudden you're like, what the hell? And you kind of like slowly like roll over into misery. You like, why did I even give her my number? Damn, she keep calling me. I wish she would leave me alone. Give me a little space. I need to find myself. You, if you ain't find yourself yet, damn, you need to look. And it's usually at this point where I wind up like stopping and start all over with somebody new in enchantment again. But for those of us that have a program in our life that got 12 steps and a sponsor, we are blessed to be able to move into the fourth stage with that same mate. And that last stage is called mutual respect. And what that's saying is I got a life and you got one too. And when we come together, there's quality time spent. I don't need you to make my day sunny or bright because God does that for me. I don't give you the power to make me happy or sad because God does that for me. I don't need you to make me whole because God will do that for me. See, I'm recognizing and understanding that the fifth step serves a dual purpose. It lets me know what order to keep God in always first. See, man may fail you, but God never will. I've always placed the power in man. Do you understand what I'm saying? If his day wasn't going right, he had a bad day with his boss and he take it out on me, my day was shot. Now I have a tendency like, what? You got a bad day? See you later. Don't do it. Mutual respect, loving myself enough to say to you like, look, whatever you're going through, I'll walk through it with you, but I won't go there with you as far as like being there. No. And so I made changes, y'all. And they don't know what to do with me. Because I ain't taking no shorts. Because I ain't giving no shorts. I ask everybody, well, if it's a party, as far as this relationship is going, what you bringing to this party besides your horn? We all got horns. So I'm changing and I'm, oh man, I'm growing up. And I'm doing some stuff. Because Narcotics Anonymous shapes and molds you like a lump of clay. And through sponsorship and having sponsees and getting involved with your home group, getting involved in service, letting people know who you are by raising your hand and saying, this is who I am. I may not be who you think I should be, but thank God I'm here. See, we have to remember as experienced members to fan the flame of desire and not dampen it. See, I gotta always remember to be an example to the best of my ability and let you know who I am. This is me in a nutshell. I got one disease. I have one fellowship. I have one home group. I got one sponsor. And I got one God, and that's all I need. Thanks for letting me share. I'm done.